Whenever I come to Earth, I listen to BBSRadio.com. Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener, has been helping folks from around the world, and he can help you too. Listen to Don't Panic, It's Organic, every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can just listen or you can call in and talk directly to the Invisible Gardener right here on BBSRadio.com/Don't Panic, It's Organic. That's Don't Panic, It's Organic, every Saturday afternoon on BBSRadio.com/Don't Panic, It's Organic.
Don't panic, it's organic. The way that nature intended it. Don't panic.
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener. Thank you for listening to my show. We have a lot going on today. First thing I want to tell you about is how to get to the show. You're just probably listening onto a podcast. You go to my website, invisiblegardener.com. You click on radio show, which is at the homepage. Click on where it says live show. By the way, this is also how you get to Cosmic Spaceship. So you click on live show. It takes you to the radio station website. On the left side, you'll see Don't Panic, It's Organic. Join in live via Zoom, or you can also use the phone numbers there to call in and talk to me, okay? That's, people have been asking me that, so I'll tell it to you now and show you so you can get at it, okay? Thank you. Enjoy the show. Today's show, what I'm going to be talking about, thank you for your suggestions. We have questions and answers. You know, you can always answer your questions. So if somebody sent me a question, how to fertilize my trees, then I'm going to be talking about bricks, how to buy a refractometer, and how to use one. Actually, go online and show you. And then I'm going to be talking a few places that they sell rock dust. And I'm also going to be talking about growing indoors. So growing indoors using LED lights, show you how some people are doing it. We're also going to have a new Andy EcoCat. And, of course, Invisible Gardener Weekly Live Camp. See what I've been doing this week. We have a contest. Only 2 weeks left in the contest to enter. You get the Organic Invisible Gardener's Growers Kit. Also have a membership. Membership is free, currently free, and show you about the podcast info, YouTube info. Enjoy the show. Information on how to get a refractometer. So I just went to my favorite place, the Amazon, typed in refractometer, see? And this is what came up. These are some of the refractometers they recommend. This is the one that I'll show you the one that I liked. They're very, very inexpensive, don't cost very much. You can spend thousands of dollars for one. I have one that's worth $10,000. I have one that's worth $25. They both do the same identical reading. Very, very simple, so you just have to have some idea what it is you're looking for. And so here are some of them available now. You can see they talk about brick refractometer, right? So that particular one here, what you're interested in is the winemaking and beer brewing, right? And they go off from 0 to 32. That's all you're interested in. It's 32. You don't want to have the thousands or anything else. This one is $17.99. You can't get any cheaper than that. Explains to you how to operate, how to use it. Very, very simple to do. You put the drop. I'll explain it to more in the next segment coming up soon. This tells you how to use it, right? It explains to you how to, you know, basic operation. You look through the eyepiece, right? Very simple device, very easy to do, waterproof, less than $20, right? Less than $20. It's a wonderful little tool. There's tons of them out there in the market now that you can buy. You just have to have some idea what you're looking for, right? This is for wine and beer brewing. That's all you really need because they don't have it for any other type of testing. You see there's a wide variety. You want the bricks to be 0 to 32. It'll say 0 to 32 right there if I can ever get it down to that one little spot right there. Bricks, 0 to 32, that's what you want. You don't want it for testing, lighter fluid. You don't want it testing for other things because there's lots of different things you can use it for testing. You see there, basically you can get them for under $20. They show you that there it is. You want not more than 32 bricks. And the last show I showed you what the difference is, in the, you know, what they mean to have different brick levels. And you should have gotten the Brick Growers Kit by now, the little book that I told you can get, the PDF version. It's on my website. Just go down to the bottom of the homepage. You'll see free resources. You'll see it. Click on it. It takes you there. And that tells you the how to understand the readings, how to use it. Lots more information than you can ever get from any of these places. I have several. Refractometers. There are many on the market now. As I said, I have four refractometers. One's an analog, which is a lot more difficult to use. These here are very, very simple. The bricks are 0 to 32. You can see that. You see how easy it is. Very easy to use. You won't have any problem using this whatsoever. It's available on Amazon, but you can also look on eBay. You can look at any. That's the type one I have right there. Is a Milwaukee Instrument one. It's an analog. You see, it basically has a little digit. Comes out. It's very, very hard to see during the day. In the daylight, you have to do it inside a car or something, you see. And this tells you the information about this particular one, a dual scale. You don't have to get fancy with a dual scale. It just shows you the information in two different ways. This particular one here is how to use a refractometer on fruit. Next show, I'm going to write it down over here, refractometer on vegetables, okay, because that's a slightly little different. I plan to have, if I can't find it on the internet, on YouTube, I'll probably do my own video. But this particular one shows you the simple refractometer, under $20, right? You'll see it right there, it's under $20. And these are the different little tools that come with them, right? The screwdriver is necessary to adjust the refractometer. You want to use distilled water to adjust it to zero. And the refractometer refracts the light through water. Anytime it hits a solid, it'll tell you what that solid is. That's why when you do juice or whatever, it's water, but there's also solids in there, right? So the refractometer refracts the light, and it can be used for anything. And I have expanded it. I also use it on the leaves of the plant and everything like that. But you can use it very, very easily with your fruit and with your vegetables. So this particular segment here is how to use it on your fruits, right? And what you have to do to get it. So the refractometer is a very simple device. You see, it has a lid. You lift up, and there's where you put your liquid. You put it right there in that little blue spot there that tells you, and you look through the eyepiece. You want to point out a source of light so you can see it, or it's going to be too dark, right? Very, very simple. Right there is a key where you will have to use the little screw to adjust it. So it has a zero. So they all don't come calibrated already. So you want it. That little device you use is a way to get the liquid onto the thing if you want to, if you have problems with it. There's the simpleness, and that's distilled water. You want to use distilled water in making, you know, at least to calibrate it. But you don't have to do any water if you're using fruit, because fruits have their own water with it, right? They have a lot of liquid, whether it be a tomato. Tomatoes, very simple. Apples, grapes, you name the fruit, they're mainly liquid. And so what you do is you want to, here's an example. You take a tomato, right? You cut it up, and then you squeeze the liquid of the tomato onto the refractometer. Right, you just take the tomato and squeeze a little bit of liquid onto the refractometer. There you go. You squeeze it onto that little into the plate. There's just a few drops is all you need. See, right? And then you take you flip the eyepiece over. You piece the little piece that comes with it. You see that? And you take it and you flip that over so it lands flat onto the refractometer. You flip it over, and there it is right there. That spreads the liquid out so you can get throughout the whole thing, and then you look at it through the eyepiece, and this is what it'll look like. So this particular one is not even a 10, it's like an 8. So that tomato is not in very good shape. It should be at least 20, okay? So that tells you there's nothing in it. It's just, it looks that way, and it was grown chemically, but it doesn't have the minerals in it. You see, it should be up to, when I say 32, yeah, 32 is the best. It's just the same thing with an apple. So you slice up the apple. You just need a little piece of the apple. And then what you do is you cut it up a little bit so it makes it easier to squeeze up the product, you know, the juice, right? You slice it up a little bit. And then you take that and you squeeze. Before you do that, you want to make sure you have it totally clean with the water. So you have a new reading. You squeeze the juice of the apple or whatever fruit you're going to use, you squeeze it onto the refractometer. So you go, there you go, put a couple of drops down, make sure it spreads out even over, and you put the little lid back on, and then you look through it. Then you look through the device again to see what it was. So this particular one is not even very high. It's maybe 14, okay? Again, an apple, if you get the Bricks ebook, it will tell you what the apple should be at. And you know, at least 12 is a very minimum basic. So, but it should be in the 20s to be perfect. It should be up to 32, but it really should be reading in the 20s to be a... so again, it shows you very low mineral content, okay? And so, you know, that tells you it was grown chemically. And then you have, if you want to test with a grapefruit, a grapes, right? Grapes is excellent to use. Any fruit you can use, you basically measure and you put it down into the refractometer. You read it through the eyepiece. If you get that book that I told you about how to use a refractometer and measure bricks, it will tell you what bricks level they should approximately be at. Okay, and it's very simple to. You have to. Important thing is you have to calibrate your refractometer so it's at zero with distilled water. Zero. See, it should be right at zero when you're using distilled water. Otherwise, you'll get a false reading. And it's very easy to do. It has a little knob that comes off there, and that's where you use this little tiny little screwdriver to get in there to adjust it. You have to play with it a few times to get it to read zero, right? And that's basically all you have to do, and you want to do that on a regular basis. You get to learn.
Hello again. So Andy Lopez here. Let me show
you how to get hold of rock dust. So this place, this is a website here that you can go to find a rock dust source. You see it up there. It tells you the name and everything, where you can get it from. Lots of really good information here on this particular one. I like this company. They have some really nice sources of rock dust, one of the best dust around. You see, so there's a very good website here. Has lots of information for you to use that you can look up on and see what's going on with it. It's called Rock Dust Local, okay, so that tells you about rock dust. Lots of information there. John Haymaker is a friend of mine. He wrote the book Survival of Civilization. You can click on right there. It says read the book. Let's just do that. This is his book called Survival of Civilization by John Haymaker. Free for you to read. Enjoy it. Lots of really good information there, right? Let me show you one more source, and we'll go back here in a second. Okay, so over here, if you go down, there's lots of information here, but if you scroll down, right, you'll scroll down to where it says resources, right? And let's just scroll down a little bit more. You know, just talk about rock dust here, carbon, and so on. This is a good read here, too. Right there, it says download and read. And, of course, it has... information about certain videos they want you to see and stuff. Really, really good information here. Might as well enjoy it. And then as you scroll down some more, you're going to get to their resource section, which is what the resource section, lots of really good stuff here that you can check out for yourself. The place I would go to, as soon as we get there, it's called remineralization.org. Here it is, down right here. It's remineralized.org, right there. That's it, remineralized.org, right? Let's click on that and see where it takes you. So this is Remineralize the Earth, remineralize.org, done by Joanna Campy, a friend of mine. I fully support this organization. That's Joanna Campy right there, okay? Joanna Campy. She started it a long time ago. Good girl. And this is her website. Lots of really, really good information here on why people around the world are doing it. But here's where I would go to. Go to their resource directory. So the resource directory is exactly that. It tells you where in the world you can get rock dust from. Okay? See? It tells you all about it. So you can get it anywhere in the world. So I picked United States because that's where I'm at, multiple locations, but you can choose where you want to. So if you're in the West, like I am in California, you want to get to the places closest to you, right? So you get the West. So I'm in California, West Coast. This is the sources of rock dust that you can get off the West Coast. And if you look here, you'll see that lots of sources, and surprise, surprise, there I am, because I'm one of your local sources of rock dust. See, okay? So that's called remineralize.org. And if you follow, you know, you should write it down because you can't click on the video, but it'll take you to that site. Okay, take care now. Bye.
La la di da. Ooh, hi there. This is Andy Lopez Eagle Cat. How are we doing today? Yeah. Oh, look at butterfly. Ooh, what is that over there? Wow, wonderful. Lovely day we're having today, isn't it? More or less, right? So let's see what I'm going to talk to you about today first. Okay, so I'm doing a little eco update today. problems have been associated with pesticides. Another way to say it is pesticide linked to respiratory problems. My tongue is stuck here. You know. So it's not a biggie. Basically says 22,134 farmers reported which pesticide they were using at the time they had their specific respiratory problems. The 78 pesticides include 40, they studied 40, oh, excuse me, they studied 78 pesticides. The 78 pesticide included 45 herbicides and plant growth regulators, included 25 different types of insecticides, 6 fumicides, glyphosate, the most commonly used herbicide, which is Roundup, was associated with almost all of them. Yeah. On another case, another issue, another point, whatever, water fluoridation and type 2 diabetes. A study published in the Journal of Water and Health examined links between water fluoridation and diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is growing epidemic in the United States. Incidence rates have nearly quadrupled in the last 32 years and no signs of stopping. According to the study, fluoridation with sodium fluoride could be a contributing factor in diabetic rates in the United States, as a chemical is a known preservative of blood glucose. Gee whiz. I myself don't like city water. Wonder why. another eco news flash. Alaskan shorebirds exposed to mercury. So somehow the mercury is mercury is being deposited in the Arctic than in Alaska than we thought. Shorebirds breeding in Alaska are being exposed to mercury at levels that could be putting their population at risk, really. Thanks to atmospheric circulation and other factors, humans, the mercury that we deposit into the environment tends to accumulate in the Arctic. Mercury exposure can reduce birds' reproduction success and sometimes even be fatal. Shorebirds may be particularly vulnerable because they forage in aquatic environments where mercury is converted into a methyl mercury, the more dangerous form of mercury. Scientists investigated the level of mercury in Alaska's shorebirds and found that some birds breeding near Barrow at the state's northern end have mercury concentration upwards of 2 micrograms per gram of blood. Ouch. Okay, that's one thing. Here's a... Oh, what happened? Oh, okay. I read a lot, you know. So... one of the interesting things that I found here in this here paper has to do with aerial pesticide sprays AIDS at Sphere in Miami. So, you know, they're spraying in Miami for mosquitoes to control the Zika virus. Okay, so here's a I've written several articles, and I actually have a book out called Natural Mosquito Control, which you might want to get. But, and if people have do have a legitimate concern spraying with a nailed, it's called nailed, funny, huh? Nailed, N-A-L-E-D. Now, nailed is relatively toxic compared to other things. It does affect humans, it does affect pets, it does affect your nervous system. Recently, when they sprayed, not too long ago, they killed 1 million bees. I think it was North Carolina. And the issue here, other than the fact that the chemicals is again, it's going to affect you, your children, your pets, not to mention birds and other creatures like that, is that if one, I like my mouth, if one mosquito survives the spraying, that mosquito's children would be immune to that chemical. You don't have to do that. There's one easy product that's natural that will kill mosquitoes on contact. And that's garlic. Garlic, yes, garlic. You can spray all the garlic you want to. If they want to spray a city with garlic, garlic concentrate, there's several different ways you can get it. You can buy the product. You can make it yourself. Cities can buy the product. It's a concentrate. It's called Mosquito Barrier. There's two of them called Garlic Barrier, and the other one's called Mosquito Barrier. Mosquito Barrier is 10 times stronger than the Garlic Barrier. Yeah. And so it kills them on contact. So you smell a little garlic for a few hours, and it's gone. The mosquitoes will be gone, too. And they're not going to survive, and they won't be immune to it. Okay, next. All right, so let's see what else we got here. I don't want to read that one. Okay. Let's see. No, that was not good either. Neither is that one over here. Let's see what we got here. One of my favorite things to read is called Earth Week, Diary of a Changing World. You may want to get it. I think it goes to, let's see, where would you go get it at? Yeah, it's called earthweek.com. So go visit earthweek.com. Earthweek.com and pick up and have it a subscription. They send it to you through the email. Earth has lost 1/10 of its wilderness area since 1993 due to human activities, according to a new study. Researchers from Australia's University of Queensland and the Wildlife Conservation Society found formerly untouched landscapes twice the size of Alaska were either deforested or otherwise lost during that period, mainly in the Amazon and Central America. Wilderness is defined as an area free from significant human disturbance such as urbanization and agriculture. Ooh, a butterfly. Where'd it go? Oh. A little more than 20% of the world's land area is still considered as wilderness. Mainly located in North America, North Asia, North Africa, and Australia. Something else I want to talk to you about a little bit before I go today, and that's plastic. You all know what plastic is, right? Okay. So, you know about plastic. When you go shopping, you want to take your own bags and stuff. But here's another point that not too many people know about plastic, a source of plastic in the ocean, and that's birthday parties and balloons. So, a lot of birthday parties have balloons, and they release the balloons. And where do you think the balloons end up in? The ocean. That's right, the ocean. And guess where they end up in? Inside turtles, inside fish, inside other creatures. So we need to stop that. I know it's a party, but still you have to figure out some other way of doing that, okay? All right. So That's it for today. Thank you very much for listening to my show, and I'll be back. So for now, I'm going to put some music, okay? Happy growing organically, of course. Bye. I want some music. Yeah, music, music. Where's a button that pushes the music button? I don't see any music button around here. Oh, well, I was just going to have to see if I can do this. Ooh. Ooh, a little scary. Oh. How about this? Ha 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 ha. Ah. Okay, guys. That's it for today. I'll be doing more stuff in Eco News. If you have any questions, you can send them to andylopez@invisiblegardener.com. Thank you. Bye. Oh, push that button over there. I don't see any music. Where's the music? Oh, well, I'll just sort of dance to the music. Ooh. Ooh. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah, it's got to hang out a little bit longer, you know, wait for the music, wait for the music, wait for the music.
Okay, so here's a website that says how to grow vegetables indoors. It's one of the best ones I found. They have a lot of good information to give you some examples of how you can start growing your vegetables indoors. It doesn't have to be a big magic a big major project, right? It talks to you about the LED lights. They have some systems already set up for you, so you can easily get it. It's a very simple one. If you want to grow just a few of them there, right? There's a little bit more complicated one there, and it tells you information about everything you need to know how to grow indoors. Here's another one set up, really very simple. Not just vegetables. There's flowers everywhere. They could be vegetables, and then it also covers. There's a great book, Growing Under Lights, and it's done by the Complete Guide for Growing Indoors. You'll read it there. Here's some samples of what people are buying to grow indoors, okay? You can see the different setup is really very simple, really very easy to do. Not hard to do at all. You can grow indoors. No reason if you don't have a garden or have anything available, you can actually do this indoors, and you can have all your vegetables year-round, too. So thank you very much, and we'll continue with our show, okay?
Okay.
So here are some pictures for you, shows you what I've been doing this week. I always do a lot of work I go out every week and I do stuff. This is one of the places I go to. It's totally 100% organic. I never use any chemicals whatsoever, chemical fertilizers, chemical pesticides, none of that stuff. Everything you see there is growing. These people actually pay attention, so I've learned to use compost. I teach the gardeners how to apply compost all the time. Then the spraying becomes even more effective, right? Becomes even more effective because the living organisms are there to enjoy the food, and the plants enjoy the food. That's not a live lawn, by the way. You know, it's just fake grass. But so I do a monthly spraying for these folks, and the plants are, everything's growing beautifully. Everything's happy. They have a few problems in the sense that, you know, the gardeners is always my weakest link. So the gardeners tend to overwater. They've gone through a few gardeners. These last batch that tend to listen to me a little bit more because they see their results. Occasionally I catch them trying to do some chemical. I say, what are you doing? Oh, I need to do this. I know you don't have to do that. So the spraying becomes even more effective. They're in the process now of re-landscaping, redoing the soil. So when they take it out, they put in new compost, right, which I add the rock dust to and everything. So everything grows really, really well, really, really happy. They've been here. I've been here for almost 10 years now. Everything's getting better and better. It took a few years and a series of gardeners to go through it to get it together. The owner says, you got to listen to what Andy says. If they don't, she gets rid of them, gets another gardener. another group of people who have better listened to it. These people listen to me. They're happy. Everything's growing really well. Main thing they have to do now is just to do the pruning, keep everything clean for them. They don't have to worry about pests. Whenever they see a problem, they contact me. There's something going on here, and I tell them, they have a lot of ants. Ants come and go. These things used to be covered with thrips. They're not thrips. They're no longer there. The ants don't like the scenario because the soil is so alive. So they don't live there. They live next door. They come over constantly to try to see if they can attack, whatever is going on. But there's nothing there. The ants only attack if the tree is perfect for the source of food for them. If the plants are not a source of food for them, they're not going to attack. As simple as that, right? If it's food for the pest, it's not food for us. That's what I like to tell people all the time. So here are some more. This is, the plants that they do, the gardeners just have to keep it pruned, keep it cleaned, and learn how to control the water. They still tend to water a little bit more, even though the soil is getting healthier and healthier, can hold water. And they're learning about mulch, because mulch holds in the water, right? It's very important. It's always a weak link, right? So the weak link here is the gardeners. And again, they're learning because we have to learn to work together. Right? So there's more stuff coming on. Don't go away. Here's a little something that I was doing at another customer coming up in a second.
Well, here we are again back in the garden. Take a look around. This is a persimmon. There are two types of persimmons, and we got them both here. Over there, by the way, is coffee. These are coffee beans, coffee plants. Take a look. These are coffee plants. See? Look at the coffee beans. See, he's got coffee beans. Coffee beans. See? Coffee beans. It's a coffee plant. Getting a coffee rooster. Roaster? Rooster? Let's see. This doesn't have as much. So maybe it's just a hanging out coffee plant. See, it doesn't have as much beans as the other one does. This is the rest of the garden. Olive tree, fig tree, citrus, vegetable garden. What the hell happened? Here's a vegetable garden. Olive tree. Here are the vegetables. Isn't that nice? Gonna do a little weeding today. Right in there. Blueberries. Blueberries. Over here we have some more blueberries too, look. See? Blueberries. Lots and lots of blueberries. Citrus over there needs some little bit of care. Here we are again. Native grass called no mow. Isn't that nice? Olive tree. Another olive tree over here, a little bit older. Actually, they're both the same age. This one's just surrounded by concrete. Whereas this one over here has a lot more growing underneath it, so it's a lot happier.
So I tend to eat stuff. Everything I grow, I like to eat. This is arugula. Tasty. Eat the flowers. Huh? The flowers are delicious. And I was particularly hungry that day, so I decided, what the heck, I might as well just eat some more. So I decided to eat some more the way you're supposed to eat it, which means you get down in there and you just eat it up. Eat, eat, eat. Oh, delicious flowers. I should go chew up the flowers. Yeah. Okay, so here's another place I go to. This lady has over 100 fruit trees. And I'll talk to you a little bit about what's going on here, what's happening, so you can better understand. I've been coming here for a few years now. I tell people that my biggest problem is always the gardener, because they don't listen to me. The customers don't listen to me. When I tell them I need you to do something, they don't exactly do it. It takes them a long time to come around. So this is, and I'll show you what's going on here at this place so you can see what's going on, so you can better understand what the problem is, right? And once you understand the problem, I tell people there's long-term and short-term solution, right? I also tell people you deal with your costs and you eliminate the effects. And the way we're taught now is we have to we deal with the effects, spray this pesticide, spray this fungicide. That's not the cost. If you eliminate the cost, if you deal with the cost, you eliminate the effects. Right, I think I made that up. I'm not really sure. But let's take a look and see what's going on here. There's lots of stuff going on here. You see all those are fruit trees everywhere. And I spray this place once a month. This is my rainbow. I'm a rainbow maker. I make rainbows. I spray this place once a month, and I constantly talk to the gardener, talk to the owners. What is going on? That's the whole idea, is to educate people. Right? Educate them as to what the real problem is. They say, Andy, what's going on with this? And I tell them. And you know what? It always comes down to health of the soil. And so I want to explain to you a little bit what's going on in this lady's property here so you better understand what's going on with your fruit trees. Right? And you do want to do a foliar spraying on a regular basis. That's the best way to get food to them, because if their soil is having a problem, right? If the soil is having a problem, the plants are not going to get the food they need. So there's a short-term and a long-term solution. The short-term is to give them the food they need. Just like a doctor. You go to the doctor and the guy says, we need intravenous here. Well, that's a short-term. Give them what they need immediately and then work on the problem, to solve the long-term problem, whether they're not eating right, whether whatever, right? So if you take a look and see, there's tons of fruit trees here. I mean, literally, there's peaches and everything all over the place, right? And so let's take a look and see if I can see. Okay, so look at this here. This is a peach tree that has peach leaf curl. And I'll show it to you a little bit. I should be able to get a little closer up to it, but it's got peach leaf curl. It's one of the problems they have on here. They had a lot of other problems, but we're slowly eliminating the problems, but you'll never solve the problems if you don't deal with the health of the soil. If you look, you'll see that there are some curly leaves on it. It's called peach leaf curl. Let's see if we can spot one. There they are there. I have to move a little slower, but you'll look to see all the leaves are curled up. Right there in the left-hand corner, you'll see the leaves are curled up. Look at all the leaves curled up. That's called peach leaf curl, right? And that is a soil problem. Sure, you can spray different things on it to reduce the problem. I spray my super seaweed on it. You'll see that it's got, you see how the curl is? The leaves are all curled up and crunchy, right? You'll see it. That's called peach leaf curl. See that right there is peach leaf curl, okay? And so, yeah, you can spray, Bordeaux, which is a copper sulfur mixture. You can spray a wide variety of things to help reduce it. Will not solve the problem if they don't pay attention to the soil. It's a soil disease, right? All diseases of plants start in the soil. Okay, they all start in the soil. This is, by the way, the bags are there. The Dr. Earth are still in the bags. The bags don't do anything to the soil if you don't put it in the soil. I told them you need to buy the Dr. Earth planting mix. It's one of the best products on the market. Put it in the soil. You saw the bags are still there. I told the owner, how is that going to help the soil if you don't put it in the soil? I've been telling them for years to do the compost, right? And they're finally now getting around to it, and they still haven't really done it. The whole property needs tons and tons of compost on a regular basis to offset the damage to the soil. And it takes a long time for the soil to come back to life. These people have been here for 20 years already, so it's taken them 20 years of damaging the soil, and they're not going to expect the soil is not going to come back overnight. If you look, this is plums, beautiful plums, but it also has peach leaf curl. The peach leaf curl affects a wide variety of fruit trees. You see the curls on the tips of the leaves there. See, you mean that's a soil problem. That's because they're watering. It gets hotter, so they water more and more. The soil becomes it's just clay soil. It's amazing that they do fruit anywhere. It's just somebody knows what they're doing. That would be me, right? But you'll see the damage is on the leaf. It's it's a disease. And in this particular area in the front here, they're watering a lot since it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. Water is needed by the disease to spread. It goes, evaporates up into the air, right? And so there are several things you have to do to the soil, just aside from adding compost. I tell people you have to add rock dust, compost, and mulch, right? Rock dust is a source of minerals. I talk to you about rock dust all the time. Rock dust is a source of minerals. You can't put compost down if you don't have the rock dust. If you don't put, you know, the ideal scenario, right, is when you make compost, add the rock dust to the compost. I was talking to you last show about how to properly make compost. We're going to be doing that coming up. I'm going to write it down over here. How to properly make compost. That's going to be one of our next shows. I'm going to write how to properly make compost, okay? Now, if you don't use animal manure in your compost process, you remember I talked to you last show, I had a Buddhist monk who says, we don't use any animal products. And I said, I understand, you don't want to kill the animal, but you're not hurting the animal by using the animal manure. That's the way Mother Nature makes it. Mother Nature makes it so that animal manure and rock dust together, the bacteria and the animal manure eat the rock dust, and then the rock dust is available. So if you're making compost, and if you recall, last show I said, why do we make compost? Yeah, we make compost for recycling, but we really make compost to heal the soil. That's the real reason why you want to make compost. You want to imitate Mother Nature in the process of how she makes the soil, right? How she heals her soil, right? And so you want to add rock dust, compost, and mulch. It's essential. If you don't add, if your compost is, you know, you have a series of problems. You buy compost in the store, it doesn't have any bacteria. If it comes inside a sealed bag, it's not alive. Because if it was living, it would puff up the bag, it would want to breathe, right? So that's why I tell people you should buy compost from a local source. You should find somebody who's making it and talk to them. How do you make your compost? You're using rock dust. You're not putting rock dust in your compost. You're not using animal manure. Bye. And try to explain them a little. Maybe they'll understand. Oh, gee, right? But not everybody, when they make compost at home, they just stick good stuff in the kitchen. They get leaves. They get grass clipping. No animal manure. You can go to the store and buy sheep manure. You can go buy a horse, you know, I don't know if you can buy horse manure. I know you can buy bison, you know, composted bison. What I used to do, and you might be able to do that because there are lots of people, like here in Malibu, tons of people with horses and animals. Just go there and say, look, I'd like to get some of your animal manure for my compost. Actually, I would ask them, are you making compost? If they're making compost, and then if they're not adding rock dust, you introduce them to rock dust. You should add rock dust to your compost, you tell them, right? Right? Because if you add rock dust to the compost in the process of making compost, you're going to have a bacterially rich, minerally rich compost. And that's what you want to put in the ground. But a lot of people say, I add rock dust, it doesn't work. No, you can't sprinkle rock dust on the ground and expect it to work on dead soil. The rock dust has to have the minerals, the bacteria, to eat the minerals, to eat the rock dust, to make it minerals available to the plants. Right, I read an article about one guy dumped half a pound of rock dust in a raised bed, and they said, look, it doesn't work, it killed everything. Yeah, right? And then a lot of people say, I use compost, it doesn't work. Yeah, because the compost is totally dead. There's nothing in there. It's just soil. It's just soil that's been, you know, decomposed and all this stuff, leaves and grass. Yeah, it has a good foundation, but it doesn't have the proper microbial life or the minerals for it to work. So you add compost. Yeah, rock dust, compost, and mulch. That's essential to put it. That's what's wrong with this place here. They're not adding compost. They're not adding rock dust, compost, and mulch. Sure, when I spray, I'm spraying the minerals. If it wasn't for me spraying my spray mixture is made up of what I call super seaweed. That's my invention. It's a microbiological activator. I explained that to you last time. And it's also, I sell it. I sell this, the same very same thing I'm spraying to my multi-million dollar company customers, I make it available to you. Right now you can get my grower's kit, which is a 5 pounds of rock dust blend. 14 different types of rock dust blended in with microbes, right? And a quart of super seaweed for $100. A quart alone is normally $150, and the rock dust is $50. That's normally $200. You're getting it for $100 plus shipping. But what I do is I make not just the super seaweed, but I also make like a rock dust tea. I do compost tea. I do a variety of different methods of spraying. So every month I spray a slightly different mixture, whether I use rock dust tea, right, or I use compost tea, and all of them are highly bacterialized, mineral, and highly mineralized because they absorb the nutrients through their leaves. So they're getting this food, which is a short-term process. It's like intravenous feeding. You spray them, they get the food right away. But the roots are still not working. Their root systems are barely there. They're not functioning right in the sense that the roots are supposed to get the minerals and the food from the soil. So the soil is not working, and therefore the roots are not working too. Lots of stress, right? And nowadays, since you're watering a lot, right, and the heat's going up, it's getting more and more stress. The system is not working. So you have to do the long-term and the short-term solution. You have to provide, they also have olives, but in a bush form, right? Amazing how many people have olives and they don't have any faintest idea how to properly prepare olives. Maybe one of these days I might do a properly how to prepare olives show, right? But here, so you can see lots of different fruit trees. Some of them are having a slight problem. The major problem they're having here now, aside from the soil, is the peach leaf curl. Now, the peach leaf curl actually spreads when the leaves get infected and they fall to the ground. There they are again. You can see when the leaves fall to the ground, they dry, reinfects the soil. And actually, the leaves get blown around and the disease spreads. If the soil was alive, right, functioning with multiple organisms in the ground, in the soil, the disease will not be able to thrive and then produce itself, because the microorganisms in the soil will destroy, right? They will destroy the disease and not allow the disease to function. It's the same thing with ants. The microorganisms in the soil controls the ants. They control a wide variety of problems. Somebody talked to me about how to fertilize my tree. That was one of the questions I'm answered today. Well, you fertilize it with organic fertilizer, but organic fertilizer will not work in a soil that's dead. Organic fertilizers require microorganisms, the soil, to be alive for it to function. One lady says, I've used organic fertilizer, it doesn't work. Yeah, chemical fertilizer doesn't need microorganisms. As a matter of fact, chemical fertilizer destroys any microorganisms it runs across. Okay, there's a big difference between intravenous. You can't intravenous feed yourself all the time. Your stomach will die. Your stomach will just die up, and you'll die too, no matter how much nutrients you get through intravenous feeding. You see what I'm saying? So this is important for you to understand, is that if the soil is not alive and functioning, you're going to have all kinds of major problems. You see, and that's the key to everything here. Everything that I do is a slow process. People say, well, you've been coming 2 months now. I don't see any difference. Well, part of the problem is when they live there, that things start to change. They don't notice that it's changed. And the other problem is that it takes sometimes years to get the soil back in shape. So with the foliar spraying, right, when I spray, they're getting food. I also spray the ground and stuff like that. But it's important to add the rock dust, compost, and mulch to the soil. And that's going to take a while to break up, because you can't take the soil out, turn it over, and put it back in again. All you can do is put it on top, maybe turn it over a little bit on top without damaging the roots and stuff. But it takes a long time for the microorganisms to start working their way down. A lot of times, if you just put compost down and didn't do the mulch, the sun would bake it and kill the organisms. That's why you have a mulch, and usually I use an acid mulch, like a Staley gardenia mix. The reason why I use an acid mulch is because the pH of the soil, and I talked to you last time, the pH of the soil has to be in a certain place for the microorganisms to survive. Otherwise, they will not survive. It's either from 6.2, 6.4 to 6.8. That's the magic range of microorganisms. If you have a too high or too low from either side, you have less and less of these beneficial organisms. And there are different places around the world. So if you have an acid environment where things are growing, you're going to have microorganisms there that live in a different range. I talked to you about that. The microorganisms come from different parts of the world. So your plants here, you have all these fruit trees, are a perfect sample. They're all from all different parts of the world, and they usually have microorganisms in that environment that survives there. You see, so over here you want to get a general range that the organisms will survive. That's why I import a variety of microorganisms from around the world to put here, because the fruit figs are not from here. These fig trees are not from local, right? The fruit trees are not local. They're found in different parts of the world. So you want to reintroduce the organisms that they're normally have evolved with. throughout the centuries to provide the nutrients for them, right? So this is one of the places I go to, and as you can see, there's just tons and tons of fruit trees everywhere. There's one of the disadvantages of doing this is that they tend to shade. You know, you have fruit trees growing in the shade of another tree. Not such a good idea. They don't really do any heavy pruning. I finally talk them into letting me do some pruning so I can lighten up the place for them a little bit for them, right? You'll see there's tons. It's just lots of roses there, but there's also citrus, you know, so that citrus is growing. He has mangoes, all kinds of stuff growing together, and the soil is the main problem here. The soil and the fact they weren't feeding them anything. Chemical fertilizers is not the answer. Chemical fertilizers destroy the soil. So that's part of so it's a long-term solution, and it's has to do with educating the customers. I stopped trying to educate the gardeners. They haven't the faintest idea what I'm doing. Why are you spraying water, they ask. Yeah, are you spraying a pesticide? One guy did not believe that I was using totally organic stuff. No, you're spraying a chemical. You can't lie to me. This is a chemical. Everything breaks down into chemicals, right? Your body is made of chemicals. But this is a totally natural process. I can drink this stuff. Well, I probably wouldn't want to drink it. It upset my tummy. But it won't hurt me. I've been spraying myself for years. And I got, you know, that's the reason why I'm crazy, right? Okay, so I got more. Let's see what's going on over here, okay? That's what it's all about, see? So you want to do the foliar spraying to give them immediate food, but then you also got to pay attention to the soil. So in this case here, I've been working with the customers to try to slowly but surely pay attention to the health of the soil, right? That's the key to it. And that's going to take a long time. Sometimes it takes years for the soil to start to recover. Actually, it takes years for the soil to recover. So if you want things to stay alive, you have to foliar spray. You can get a similar machine that I have that will work. There are lots of different sizes. You know, there's 50 gallons, 100 gallons. I'm going to do a show about the spraying rig, okay? I'm going to write it down, spraying rig, which will help you decide how to buy your own little rig. You can buy a small rig. There are lots of different things you can do, okay? Okay, everybody, we're going to be ending the show in a little bit. Started a little late, you know, so... here we go. This is about my services. So here's some information about Invisible Gardener. This is what I do. This is what I've been doing for a very long, long, long time. I actually started in 1972, but I started in the sixth grade, but I formed a business in 1972 when I got out of the service. I got the name Invisible Gardener a long, long time ago. I do natural pest control. The way I do natural pest control is by healing the soil. You probably figured out that I'm very much into healing the soil. Pests and diseases all start with the soil. I do a natural spraying service. It's a monthly natural spraying service. We treat the whole property, trees, flowers, roses. I don't wash cars with it or anything like that. I'm a natural arborist. The way I heal the trees is by healing the soil. One time ago I said, well, they're growing trees in soil. Maybe I should do something to the soil. I'm an organic consultant. I'm on TV and radio. Here's the radio, and I have a TV show that you can see it through my website. You'll see Invisible Gardener TV up there. I do house calls. If you're lucky enough to have me in your neighborhood, I'll be happy to come and do a house call. It's $100 a visit right now. It depends where you're at. Travel for charge. And because of the drought and the fire and the water problems, let me help you to make it through this period of change. You don't have to, your property does not have to suffer because you don't know what you're doing. I do soil restoration. I bring the soils back to life. I bring your soil back to life. That's the key to everything I'm doing. I've said it quite a few times on this show, and I will continue to say it. I do soil testing, so I can provide all types of basic soil tests, from basic biology package. I can test your compost to see what's in it, right? I can test your soil for diseases. And, of course, I do remineralization. That's what it's all about. We provide minerals from various rock sources. Dust sources. I have 14 different types of rock dust that I get just to do this properly, right? And I also, you know, I practice permaculture. I also practice biodynamics. And I have all kinds of systems that I have set up myself. And I can find it anywhere else but here. That's what I teach you, right? And I do organic fertilizations. No organic fertilizers ever used. Everything I use is organic, 100% OMRI certified organic fertilizers. And of course, I do the radio show. This is what you're watching right now. Hopefully watching and or listening. It's on bbsradio.com, or you go through my website, invisiblegardener.com. And a long time ago, people, and you know, I also do a live cam. So you can watch me right on my website. It'll say live cam. You can see exactly what I'm doing, or you can watch it here at the end of the week. It shows you what I did. Okay, guys, so we're getting ready to, we have to cut it short now so we can start my next show. I got to turn the computer off and turn it back on again, all that stuff. So we'll see you guys next week. Take care and stay safe. Bye now.